welcome.
And I can't help feel like I'm doing this.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated Island Chains Nation. My very special guest today is a heavily tattooed man. His name is Chris Spivey. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinny.
Whew, lucky we got you. We've been spending the last half hour trying to sort out technical issues, and they have been sorted. Well, not really. We got it by phone, so it's all good. Anyway, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do, Chris?
Well, I'm a tattooist by trade, but basically, Vinny, I'm just fed up with the politicians taking the Michael out of us all the time. You know, they're not working for us, they're working for other people, very powerful people, and frankly, they're just screwing us, really.
What woke you up to that fact?
Sorry?
What woke you up to that fact? And I acknowledge that it's a fact, not a theory.
Really, I mean, I've always been sort of not in sync, if you like, you know? Nothing's ever seemed quite right. I always thought that, you know, nothing seemed to change. And then when, like a lot of people, 9/11 came about, that sort of didn't fit in.
Well, Chris, we're having some very, very bad problem with your line there, like a big scratchy sound or something like that.
I don't know why. I can hear you fine.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. It sounds fine now.
So, as I was saying, 9/11. Now I've got a scratchy sound myself.
See, now the scratchy sound's back again, bro.
Yeah.
It just kind of, like, goes out and you sound fine, and then it just comes back and goes...
Yeah, I can hear it now, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not dancing or anything.
Yeah. Shoot!
Right. We try again. So, yeah, 9/11 sort of came about, and nothing added up there. Sort of started digging into that, and it just went from there. Just started researching, and this is where I am today.
Yeah. Happens to a lot of people, I guess.
Sorry?
Happens to a lot of people, I guess.
It's happening to more and more people, which is, it's happening to more and more people. Not quick enough, though, Vinny. Not quick enough, mate. We're running out of time, you know? And take this Thatcher's funeral for a start. It's costing, well, some quotes are saying £20 million. So how can you justify spending £20 million when the best they can get is 25% of the people? Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can make out what you're saying over the...
Yeah.
This is just not working, bro.
You're a long way away from me, mate.
If you go to the Skype, and if you have a cell phone or something like that, we can probably get you on that. So just type us in that phone number, and we should be able to reconnect you, see if it works better. Okay. Well, we seem to have lost Chris. All right. Well, let's see if we can fill in for him here. The element of false flag terrorism that 9/11 presents for people is a life-changing event. You suddenly recognize that, oh my God, I've been sitting there watching these towers explode over and over and over and repeats itself. Terrorism, Al-Qaeda. And suddenly you get the idea that, oh my God, those towers were blown up by terrorists in Al-Qaeda. And then, later on, you think to yourself, hey, what's the melting point of steel? Oh, no, it's like 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit or something. Oh, okay. And what's the hottest temperature that jet fuel can get up to? I don't know, about 800 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. Right. So you're saying that it's, in physics, impossible for jet fuel to melt steel. That's right. Yet they claim that it melted the steel. And made the entire building explode into particleized dust. I'd be like, yeah, yeah, that's right. You freaking lying bastards! How dare you tell such a monumental fib, mate? Unfreaking believable. Am I the only one that sees that this is just fully insane? Like, fully insane? I don't know. It's beyond a joke to me that people can look at the evidence. I mean, just looking at the event and having it repeated to you over and over again, that's enough to convince most people that it's true. Okay, but upon further study, looking at some principles and things of that nature, it just doesn't fit with reality. And that's the vast majority of people, really, what won't actually get to that point, or might not. Who knows what the future holds. But most people won't get to that point of simply looking into something. Okay, most of our lives are spent as passive observers. Passive observers. That's all we've really got. That's our claim to fame. That's all we're capable of really doing. And the jump from being passive observers to active observers comes through this information. And once you hear the theories, okay, so there's, what are we talking about? Nanothermite or controlled demolition or directed energy weapons or nuclear bombs, mini nukes or whatever they call there, either planted in the basement or whatever, the possible Israeli Mossad connections and things like that. Incidentally, there was an Israeli shipping company in the World Trade Center that moved out the week before 9/11 and they broke their like lease. Somebody knew what was up. Lots of people knew what was up that day. Apparently, children in classrooms around New York City were talking about the towers coming down days before it happened. You know, maybe they'd overheard some conversation between mummy and daddy. A whole bunch of people didn't turn up to work. Those who did turn up to work never came home. Well, most of them anyway. Can you understand the mentality of a false flag terrorism attack? Okay, so let's think about this. You're walking down the street, let's say you're a man, and you see this woman that you think is absolutely gorgeous and you want her. Instead of buying her flowers and chocolates and taking her out for a nice meal and stuff like that, you trip her up. But you convince her that it was somebody else that tripped her up later. And then you catch her as she falls. And you go, oh, I'm your savior. And she loves you. And then you get your way with it. That's false flag terrorism, basically. You cause the very problem and then pose as the savior. It's in every movie, pretty much. You know, Star Wars Episode 3. I am the Dark Evil Emperor. And I made this entire Clone War happen. Just so that I can control all of the systems under a great galactic empire. Yep. Sounds about right. It's not entirely dissimilar from the war in Iraq after 9/11, is it? Is it? Oh, they've got weapons of mass destruction. How do you know that? Well, we looked at the receipt. But as soon as that check clears, we're going in. Are you kidding me? Can we ask as well, how many people have died in Iraq? Over 1 million? Conservatively? How many people died in Iraq during suicide bombings on the day that the people of Boston got bombed? Probably by the government too. About 33. 33 versus 3. Yes, and I understand the number 33 is very interesting. There happened to be that many. It was just on the same day. You know, here we are in New Zealand watching the news, and out of the, hour or so of extended coverage they have for these three white Americans that died, there's just a mention. Oh, and by the way, 33 people died in Iraq by suicide bombers today. Good night, everybody. don't give a frack, do they? Not in the media apparel performance. And then, of course, the United Kingdom gets hit by its own false flag as well on 7-7. Where they're doing a drill. This is an interesting connection, isn't it? So, on 9-11, they're doing a drill in NORAD about passenger aircraft being hijacked and flown into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the White House. Okay? They managed to hit quite a few of those targets, don't you think? And there were artificial blips on the screens and stuff like that, so nobody knew what the heck was going on. Jets didn't scramble until like 15 minutes after they should, and they went in the wrong direction. Somebody was messing with those people. Then on 7-7, oh, you've got how many tube bombs? Like, what, 2-3 tube stations and a bus?
Hello, Vinny.
Oh, hey, here we go. We got Chris back.
How we going, mate? All right.
We're doing all right.
Yeah. So what were we talking about, Vinny?
Well, I was just trying to explain the outlays of false flags and how they kind of happen to everybody.
Yeah.
Like on 7-7, they've got, four bombs that went off, one of them on a bus that had a banner that said absolute terror.
That bus had been diverted as well. It should have been in Russell Square. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It was the only one sent up there, and it wasn't meant to be up there. There's very suspect. And also, you know, that the holes blown into cabbages, the metal was facing upwards rather than downwards. So the bombs came from beneath the trains, you know? So that doesn't make sense. And then there's the photoshopped pictures of the terrorists. I don't know if you've seen it. It's quite a famous picture. Of the terrorists entering the tube station, and there's a railing there, and the railing goes right through one of them's body. So, that's very suspect straight away. Plus, the explosives they had, they wouldn't have been able to get hold of. It's military grade. So, all that talk about homemade bombs and that was rubbish as well.
Yeah. On top of that, a couple of the suicide bombers were seen leaving stations and got shot down by police in the Isle of Dogs. isn't that funny?
It's like the terrorists from 9/11, Vinny, isn't it? Do you know, most of them are still alive.
Yeah. They claim that they're victims of identity theft.
Well, whatever they are, they're still alive, mate. And as for passports flying out of aeroplanes that hit buildings and landed intact, that doesn't make... Well, that's beyond silly, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, we were discussing this yesterday in relation to the Boston bombings, because just like on 9/11, just like on 7/7, the Boston bombings had a bomb drill going on.
Yeah, okay. Same as a bombing as well.
Yeah, my girlfriend was looking at a Facebook post and it says, if the government is doing a drill, get the frack out of town.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's good advice to take. But,
don't worry, it's just a drill. And then everybody goes, it's running.
Well, it didn't make sense anyway to me, Vinny. We had Thatcher's funeral. But instead they choose to plant bombs in Boston, you know, a couple of bombs anywhere in London yesterday would have done the trick, you know, and get them a lot more attention. I mean, imagine if that had caused chaos, set a couple of bombs off in the East End, or even away from the funeral, imagine how much disruption that would have caused, you know. I say they didn't even have to set them off at the actual location, you know?
Mm.
So doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, I was watching footage from Boston last night. They've locked practically the whole fracking city down. They've closed all the schools. They've stopped all public transport. They've got troops and all this fricking massive body armor and tanks on the streets and all of this kind of stuff for a manhunt for, like, one or two guys, they claim.
Haven't they shot them now or something? Didn't I see earlier?
Really? Is that what happened earlier?
I believe they've been shot dead. Don't quote me. I haven't been on the internet that much today. I've been busy with other things, but as far as I know, yeah, they've shot them dead, which didn't make sense either.
If you've got a bomber and something like that, hey, you want to take them alive so that you can send them to jail.
Of course you do, but it's the same as this Bin Laden thing, isn't it? All the people who supposedly shot him, they're all dead. That biggest attack or most successful attack the Taliban has ever had, shooting down the helicopter, and it just happened that the Navy SEALs who supposedly killed Bin Laden were there.
Yeah, we're all on there, overloaded as well. You're only supposed to have 6 SEALs per chopper, I think, or something like that, and they had the whole SEAL team,
the whole lot of
one chopper,
exactly.
Got taken down.
You know, and that was the most successful Taliban hit to date. It just doesn't make sense, mate. All that burying at sea. Why did they bury him at sea? He wasn't in the Navy.
Yeah. Well, Chris, hold on a second. We're coming back to break. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
The world we knew is gone.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny, slave, British-controlled South Pacific. My very special guest is Chris Spivey, tattoo artist and conspiracy expert-ish. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Right. Now, we've got him via webcam and phone, so we've managed to get some sort of a technical issue going on here. It's good. It's good.
Friday on the show, we'll be there.
Yeah. Where were we?
We were talking about Bin Laden, wasn't we? The anomalies around his death, you know, sort of why would they bury him at sea? What is the point of that? He wasn't a Navy man. Funerals for the sea are for Navy men, aren't they? It's just all too convenient.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, and that didn't make sense. They said it was so that they couldn't. No one could sort of destroy his grave and whatnot. Well, what a load of old twaddle that is, you know. We had Myra Hindley. You know, you've heard of Myra Hindley in New Zealand, I take it.
No,
she was a mass murderer of children in the 1960s, and she died a few years back. But they didn't bury her at sea. You know, and she was absolutely reviled. So that just makes no sense whatsoever. That Jimmy Savile hasn't been buried at sea, has he? Yeah, right. They've removed his headstone, but they didn't bury him at sea. So that just makes no sense. That's just a little bit too convenient, isn't it? You know, the whole thing was a lot of old bollocks anyway, Vinny, wasn't it? He had the old man looking at videos of himself or what the newspaper said, this is Bin Laden, the footage was taken from behind, not front. Well, why do that? Who takes a home movie from behind? But they portrayed him as a sad sort of figure, watching these home movies of his glory days, so to speak. And then in the next breath, they're saying, he's the most dangerous man in the world. You can't have it both ways. You know, you can't one minute be like Satan and the next minute be, a sad old man. It's just bollocks, mate.
It was quite hilarious to me. I asked my friend, Genocide is a Muslim rapper here in New Zealand, and said, bro, they said it was a Muslim burial to dump them into the ocean. He's like, nah, bro, Muslim burial, you have to bury them really, really quickly, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, within 24 hours.
Within 24 hours, 6 feet under the ground so animals can't get them. In what world does that translate as turn them into shark bait?
Exactly. I said it was all just too convenient because his body can't be exhumed, can it? And there's no way of proving whether it was him or wasn't him. But we all know he died shortly after 9/11 anyway. He was in the American Army Hospital in Egypt, I think, if I remember rightly. on dialysis. He was very sick anyway, wasn't he? So it was just sort of convenient, a distraction, if you like, to sort of finish him off there. And to have all them American politicians in the one room with Hillary Clinton, what an evil woman that is. Hillary Clinton sort of clasping her mouth in mock horror. It's almost ghoulish, isn't it? Let's watch this man shot today, who isn't being shot, but, you know, what a load of old twaddle. And I say, then kill off all the Navy SEALs as well. Whether they actually did get killed off, whether they existed at all, Vinny, is questionable, isn't it? You know? Because it just wasn't Bin Laden. It wasn't, you know? What a load of old crap.
If the government tells me the sky is blue, I'm going to have to check just before I believe it, you know?
Well, yeah, we are, Vinny, but millions and millions of other people aren't. You know, they're all buying into this crap. I've written a few things on Thatcher, getting back to Thatcher. And people, they're arguing between whether she, you know, did any good or whether she did any bad. Like, you know, some say that her breaking of the unions was a good thing, others... Well, obviously, no, it wasn't a good thing. But that's beside the point. The point is, she spent 11 consecutive Christmases with a known paedophile, a necrophile as well, you know, Jimmy Savile. 11 consecutive. Now, you look at Thatcher, you know, sort of with her prim and proper hair and a posh speaking voice, and that, and you look at Jimmy Savile with his flamboyant clothes and his dyed hair, and you think, well, what the hell have they got in common? What are they going to talk about? Yeah, 11 consecutive Christmases. And she would bend over backwards to help him out, you know, appearing on his shows, appearing on his radio shows. He even bragged in the newspaper that he was responsible for getting her into power. Now, I know I've been tongue-in-cheek, but that sort of close, and that goes to the royal family as well. It's just been announced today, world exclusive in the Sun newspaper, Britain's biggest selling newspaper, that Rolf Harris was arrested. Well, I've been printing that for the last 5 months, that Rolf Harris, but suddenly it's a Sun exclusive. But, you know, once again, straight away, the picture that accompanies it is of Prince Charles. Why? Why is Prince Charles such good friends with all these people, you know, Jimmy Savile, Rolf Harris? You can connect everyone who's been arrested back to the royal, and have all been rewarded by the Queen as well, of course. That's, you know, it almost makes anyone who gets an MBE suspect. But they won't knock on the palace door. They won't even question them. Do you know, when it's over. And I don't know if you've seen the photos, Vinny, of Savile and Prince Charles. But
no.
There's obviously a very, very close relationship there, you know. And, of course, Savile was friends with the old man, the duck, as I call him, full of duck, Prince Philip. And they fell out, you know, we hear these, they fell out spectacularly. Well, what the hell can a DJ he's the King of England in all but name. What can they fall out over? Why didn't they, you know, did it just sort of freeze him out of the royal circles? Why fall out and have this big argument? You know, it doesn't make sense. Once again, Savile was introduced to Prince Philip through Mountbatten. I did an article on Mountbatten just the other day. A known paedophile, I mean, that man was a pervert of the First Order. When you got the mainstream media commenting on the marriage and admitting that they were having a threesome with the Indian Prime Minister just after the war, I forget, Nehru or whatever his name was, and the mainstream media are admitting that they used to have threesomes, this Mountbatten, Mrs. Mountbatten, and the Indian Prime Minister, and that's how perverted they was.
Can I say something? Allegedly, that is basically how the upper echelons work on straight up sexual debauchery. More to the point, recorded at some point, so that if they ever start speaking out or whatever, out come the pictures of you with a little kid.
Exactly, and this is how Skull and Bones works as well. But George Bush was in there for a house, and then apparently, you know, the sort of masturbation going on there sex with fellas and whatnot. So that way, you know, that stops them from speaking out. Vinny, Mountbatten, without a doubt, was abusing the Duke, Prince Philip. And then, knowing that, he then left the young Prince Charles in his care. Now, what kind of parent leaves their little boy in the care of a known paedophile, mate?
Maybe one that wants to see them sexually abused so that they can be controlled for the rest of their life.
And this is just the norm. This is the norm within the royal family, and people just can't get their heads around this, you know. They see these posh-talking, well-to-do people, and they can't think no bad of them, you know. And I see people waving their little flags at them. Well, the Queen is the richest woman in the world. We've got children starving in this country, mate. Starving in England today. There is children starving. And what was she doing about it? You know, she's meant to be this gracious, noble queen. She could end world poverty, let alone British poverty, and still be a multi-trillionaire. But what does she do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, I keep posing the question in my articles, what has the Queen done in the 60 years that she's been on the throne for England, you know, or for her subjects? And there is, she brings a lot of money in. In tourism. Of course she doesn't. The heritage would still be there. You know, people don't say, hey, honey, we're going on holiday, let's go and see the Queen. You know, they're not going to see the Queen. They come to see the palaces, the heritage is still going to be there, even when the Queen is long gone. You know, to say that the Queen brings in so many millions is just bollocks. And on top of that, even then, the money that he's brought in tourism is nowhere near the cost of the upkeep of the royal family. Now, I say, Vinny, if people want the royal family, let them pay for her. And if they don't, they don't serve no purpose on as far as the public are concerned. They just so, but they're not ceremonial, Vinny. They're not. We cannot go to war without the Queen say so. We cannot end a war without a Queen say so. She has the power to sack the government, you know, as she did with the Australian Prime Minister a few years back. I can't remember which one.
Kevin Rudd?
I'm not sure which
one. I thought they did it to the Canadian government. They actually did suspend the Canadian Parliament for a number of months, actually. I think it was like she suspended them for like 3 months.
I'm sure it was the Australian Prime Minister, mate. I may be wrong. I haven't got my notes in front of me, but I'm sure it was the Australian. Going back a few years now. But although they didn't come out and say the Queen has sacked the Australian Prime Minister, as you know, because she is the Queen of Australia as well. But it was her doing. It was all, you know, sort of traced back to her. And this is, but people think, she's just ceremonial. But that is a load of old bollocks, mate. She's far from ceremonial. They have an awful say, and in the event that Prince Charles is continually lobbying for more money, well, you know.
There's two things I'd like to add in here. One was an article out of the Telegraph, I think, where the Queen was pleading poverty and that she wanted a fund that was meant to go to the poor to go to her so that she could heat the palaces that she
didn't That's right, yeah. She couldn't afford a central heating bill. Yeah. You know, and people believe it. But this is the thing, Vinny. This is the serious thing. People believe it, and that is dangerous, mate. That is where the... Because whatever the mainstream media... No one questions it. No one questions it. No one. How many governments have come and gone in the past, and no one's ever known better? Oh, well, that's it. Do you know, I say, I'm not going to vote for Conservatives, I'm going to vote for Labour. You vote for the same people, mate. You know, it's the whole system. You've got to think outside the box now, because the system isn't working. It's designed not to work. It never will work. And people are just contributing to their deaths, mate.
Well, I disagree. I think the system is working, and it's working really well. It's just it's not meant to be working for us.
exactly. So sooner or later, the economy is going to collapse. It has to collapse. I mean, we've got all these austerity measures over here, they've been in place since at least 2 years. Getting tougher and tougher, yet the national debt, a fraudulent debt, is continually rising. Do you know, it's not going down. And we're talking about the interest, Vinny. We're not talking about paying the debt off, we're talking about paying the interest. And this is what's happened, of course, this is what's happened in Greece and whatnot. They can't afford the debt. They can't afford the interest on the debt. The bankers aren't worried about the actual debt. It's as long as they get their interest payments on it. Once you default on that, they call it in, and then that's when your economy collapses. And this was what happened in Greece, and it's going to happen in Portugal. This is what happened in Ireland. They could no longer afford the interest on the debt. And, I mean, you think about it. When Cameron came in and said, yeah, we've got to get this debt down, introduced all these measures to so the debt would stop rising and then they could pay it off. And if it was a case of just reducing the debt, the austerity measures could be taken over a longer period of time. Why, you know, all of a sudden... But it's not. I say it's the interest, and that is the crucial thing. That's what people have got to understand. They've also got to understand it's a fraudulent debt. You know, Iceland defaulted on it. Iceland's doing very nicely now. You never read about Iceland in the mainstream media. Why not?
Yeah, the perfect example of what happens when you just go, hey, hold on a second, Mr. Bankster scumbag, you're a fraudster. And all the debt that you think you've got us in, you just made that stuff up. All right. Now it's. I think of it as like a medical thing, okay? If the debt doesn't go down in 4 years, you've got to contact your doctor. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about the fact that you've got nowhere to hide, nowhere to run. We're all slaves, and we live in a slave, serf, scumbag-controlled planet. And if we don't expose those who are really behind the scenes in control, we're going to be screwed a hell of a lot worse than we are already. My very special guest, coming at us all the way from the Uber Kingdom, named after the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha Regiment, is Chris Spivey. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny. All right. Vinny, over here, just before Christmas, I was contacted by a social worker who used to work for the NSPCC, which, if you don't know, the NSPCC is the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. It is a massive, massive charity, government-funded charity at that. Now, the reason for the contact was because this social worker, Sue, her name is, her and two of her colleagues had been hounded out of this organisation simply for exposing an MK or ANC terrorist called Hein Grosskopf. Now, in 1986, Grosskopf, South African, he very well-to-do white family. His dad was the editor of Beeld, the Beeld newspaper, which is, I think, the biggest one in South Africa. Very, very prominent professor. Very upper-middle-class family. He buggered off to join the ANC in 1986, leaving a wife behind. And he, within 3 months, he was in MK. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, MK is the terrorist wing, the paramilitary wing of the ANC, the ones who set the bombs off and whatnot. To cut a long story short, he fled to England in 1991. Now, at that time, England, Ken Baker was the Home Secretary. He was looking to kick all the ANC MK terrorists out of England. This Grosskopf, he entered the country on a false passport under the name of Evans, and he stayed. But not only did he stay and get leave to stay indefinitely, he miraculously became a qualified social worker, registered with the General and Social Care Council. Now, he had to be fraudulently registered. I broke the story. A lot of people contacted the NSPCC, who refused to answer to start. I had a bit of a spat with an MP who supposedly brought all these paedophiles in British politics to the forefront, but that's a different story, but there's a load of old bollocks anyway. But I had a spat with him on Twitter over it. He said he'd sort of look, read my article and get back to me, which he never did. A lot of people contacted their politicians about this, mass murderer, basically. Although he received amnesty at the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, for one bomb on the Witwatersrand military complex, which killed one person and injured about 70 others. Although at the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, they refused to say that. They just said the 30 people was injured. They didn't admit to any deaths, although that's not true. But he was the most wanted man in South Africa with a 50 rand price on his head when he entered the country. So, and we have an extradition treaty with South Africa. We did at the time as well. Yet they let him stay, become a social worker. Well, to have in charge of grief counsellors, incidentally, children's grief counsellors. So, like, you have a mass murderer in charge of grief. That's like putting a paedophile in charge of a children's swimming class, you know? A lot of people contacted their MPs, got nowhere. Finally, the NSPCC bowed to public pressure and issued a statement saying that, he wasn't wanted by any government. The TRC said that he didn't commit a crime, which is, once again, bollocks. You know, when is a crime not a crime? Bearing in mind that South Africa now is an ANC government, so these people were sort of blowing other people up in their name, you know. So they was always going to get it. But just because you're given amnesty doesn't mean you didn't commit a crime. But the major factor here, I say, the NSPCC released this statement saying that Grosskopf, received amnesty, but he hadn't received amnesty when they took him on. Now, he was suspended when he asked for time off to go to the TRC. Incidentally, he still can't return to South Africa, so it's still too dangerous for him to return to South Africa to this very day. Which, really, when you think about Zumba, the African president, he was same in the ANC. Mandela, he was in the ANC, you know, a terrorist. They're treated like heroes, so he should have been treated like a hero, but he wasn't. You got to ask yourself why. He still can't return to South Africa. He hadn't received amnesty when he was employed as a grief counsellor by the NSPCC. Finally, to cut a long story short, the General and Social Care Council were going to forward the complaint. Panorama, a BBC TV program, investigative program, were going to do the story. The Daily Mirror, a national newspaper, and I think it was the Telegraph, if I remember, it might have been the Express. One, another newspaper, anyway, they was going to run the story. All three got warned off. Now, the Queen is the patron of this charity. Prince Andrew is fact, not, as you know, Prince Andrew, he was with the paedophile. He lost his job as our Roman ambassador for his friendship with his, this paedophile. Peter Mandelson, who they call the Prince of Darkness, twice drummed out of British politics for wrongdoing, fast-tracking passports for his boyfriend, his Brazilian boyfriend and whatever. A known paedophile, as the sort of face of the NSPCC, and we cannot get any answers. I say, the NSPCC statement that they released was total bollocks. I proved it was total bollocks. My MP, my own MP, will not even answer me, will not even acknowledge that he got my emails. The list is long. We have Tom Watson, Eric Pickles, 10, 15 MPs, all refusing to acknowledge people. Go on.
You're aware of Pie and Mash Films, right?
I am, yeah, Bill Mahoney, yeah.
Yeah. Well, didn't Bill interview some dude who said that he's got a list of known paedophiles in the UK, and about 300 of them out of the 600 sitting MPs are still there, and they're known paedophiles?
There was, when we had the Blair government in, he brought in a D-notice because of Dunblane. Do you know the Dunblane massacre where a fellow called Thomas Hamilton walked into a children's primary school and shot dead, I think it was 18, I haven't got one else in front of me, but I think it was 18 children aged between 5 and 6 and the teacher. Now, he was a Freemason, and he'd been turned down for... He was known paedophile. He'd been turned down for a gun licence, but Lord Robertson overruled the decision, if you like, and he gave him the shotgun licence, which he used to kill. They brought a D-notice in. They're all connected to a very high... children's paedophile ring, Scottish paedophile ring, you know, and the evidence is protected under the 100-year rule. Like normally, you get 30-year disclosure rule, but it's locked away for 100 years. But Tony Blair bought this D-notice under the guise of national security for the first Iraq war, which but it wasn't. On top of that, he'd been caught. Flashing, if you like, in men's toilets. A few, which seems a popular pastime for British prime ministers. I don't know how Margaret Thatcher got on with it, but Edward Heath was known for which he was blackmailed into taking us into the EU or common market, as it was then, for the same thing, and for taking boys from the Hortigau in Jersey, boys' home. Out on his boats, for life and whatnot. But, so Tony Blair protected all, because a lot of them were caught up within Operation Orr, where they caught all the internet paedophiles, you know, buying porn and whatnot. And I think that's the list you're talking about. They're still in politics. I mean, we've got... The case where Ken Sue Clark, I call him, a heavyweight politician from the Thatcher era who's still in the Cameron government today. Ben Fellows, a former child actor, publicly accused him, and I believe has even made a police statement now, which was at the end of November, according to the tap blog. Bedfellows, mate, I say. And what the claim is, although he was 18 at the time, Ken Clark believed that he was 15 and touched his penis in the House of Commons through his trousers in a fellow called Ian Greer, Greer's office, who is a lobbyist. And I say Ken Clark says he's through, but he hasn't.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with a little bit more from Chris. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness and pedophilia, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Speaking of which, my very special guest, Chris Spivey. Chris, do you have a website, mate?
I do, yes. www.chrisspivey.co.uk. Everything that I've been talking about on here tonight is on there as well. Check it out. But get back to this our politicians being involved in paedophilia. It seems a common thing. This taking children to the House of Commons. Cyril Smith, who is dead now. The only ones who seem to be responsible for paedophilia are all dead. As soon as they die, then easy target, obviously, but try catching the live ones. That's a different kettle of fish altogether. But Cyril Smith used to take these young boys to the House of Commons and whatnot. And this is what Ken Clark, Ben Fellows, has accused Ken Clark of doing. I say, the fact that disregarding that he was 18 at the time, Ken Clark thought he was 15. That's the all-important thing. He thought he was 15. And Ian Greer, whose office they was in when this alleged assault took place, was tied up with a fellow called Derek Lord. Derek Lord is a bit of an enigma. In so much that he's very posh spoken, acts like a lord, but he's black. Now, when he first started under Thatcher, he was a very good friend of Thatcher's. Black politicians were relatively rare, you know. Although he did try to make a politician, but he never quite cut it. But he became a lobbyist anyway. He was named in 1999 in Scallywag magazine as a serious child rapist.
Whoa! Did you say Scallywag magazine?
I did, yes, indeed.
That is the most awesome sounding magazine title I have ever heard in my life.
It's defunct, actually. Another prime minister was responsible for that. John Major. They accused John Major of having an affair with someone who worked in the number 10 Downing Street kitchens. Turns out he wasn't having an affair. He sued, took him to the cleaners, but he was having an affair with Edwina Curry instead, who, incidentally, I believe that she attended Thatcher's funeral with John Major and Norman Major. I wonder if they had a conversation there about the old times.
I'm looking at your website now, Chris, and yes. Having a look at this. Is this Prince Charles the who murdered Mountbatten photo, or who is that guy?
Mountbatten was he was the great-grandson of Queen Victoria, an uncle to Prince Philip, who I call the Duck. I say he was a predatory paedophile. He was last viceroy of India, where he used to rape little Indian children. From there, he moved on to the Kinkora boys' home in Ireland, in Belfast. Now, according to Greg Hallett, he's from your part of the world. You know Greg Hallett?
Yeah, I've met Greg a couple of times.
Yeah, well, according to Greg Hallett, he was killed on the orders of the Duck, or Prince Philip, because of the heroin dealing. Evan Eve, who another politician who was blown up. He was supposedly got at Mountbatten and was going to expose this heroin dealing ring. And we're talking about a major international ring. And let's not make any bones about this, Vinny. They're all involved in the heroin dealing. You take Afghanistan. There is more heroin coming out of Afghanistan now than ever before. Now, when we invaded Afghanistan, the UK was given the task of supposedly changing the poppy farmers' crops, you know, giving them financial incentives to grow sort of legal crops and whatnot. And they was going to destroy all these poppy fields. Now, with the technology that they have, you can't tell me that they can't find these poppy fields. They can listen to a man, you know, from space. They can listen to a man on his mobile phone conversation, pinpoint a man. But they can't find all these acres of poppy fields, and there's more heroin now coming out of Afghanistan than... Go on.
They can't find these poppy fields that their troops are guarding.
Yeah, exactly. That's the ones. You know the ones.
I can't find it. Where is it? We're supposed to be guarding. Is it that one or is it the neighbour's one? I don't know.
I can find them on Google Earth, mate. You know, so with their kind of technology, but apparently they can't find them. But the government and the royal family are all involved because it is a £1 billion industry, you know. And it's hoping to pay the interest on this fraudulent debt as well, keep the country afloat, like they do. The IRA officially blew Mountbatten up on his fishing boat. One man, Thomas McMahon, who carried this 50-pound bomb onto this royal fishing boat, planted it, got arrested that same night, but someone else detonated the bomb, blew him to bits. According to Greg Hallett, it was on the orders of Prince Philip, because he was going to talk to Evan Eve and they were going to expose. But whether that's true or not, I don't know of any. But he was a predatory paedophile, as I say. He was having a relationship with Edward VIII, the king who abdicated, married Wally Simpson. Well, Edward VIII was a cross-dresser anyway. The Queen Mother was hopelessly in love with him. Incidentally, Bill Mahoney of Parmash Films, he stood on the steps of Trafalgar Square and publicly called the Queen Mother a paedophile. And wasn't arrested for it. She was alive at the time, you know. So I printed an article the other day. Actually, I found on when she used to have these dinner parties, and then she'd make her guests sort of run around the living, making out they was horses in a horse race. You know, she'd whip them. Anyway, this is this woman who supposedly married the Queen's dad, was hopelessly in love with Edward VIII, who, as you know, married the old slapper Wallis Simpson, and she was a right old slapper. Let's not make any bones about that. And she sort of supposedly never got over it. The official story is that she hated this Wallis Simpson so much because her husband had become king and whatnot, and he wasn't up to it. He had a very low IQ, actually. Take no notes of that film, the King's Speech, a lot of propaganda that is. But she was hopeless in love with Edward, who, I say, was a cross-dresser, had an affair with this Mountbatten, his cousin. Now, Mountbatten was the uncle, proper uncle, to Prince Philip, whose last name is Mountbatten as well. And from there, from abusing him, he then moved on to Prince Charles with Prince Philip and the Queen's blessing, so to speak, you know. Like we said earlier on, that's the way they, to them it's normal. To them it's normal. People just can't see that, they can't understand it. And this is the danger of any, I say, because people are so closed-minded. and unwilling to believe. They wave their little flags like, oh, the Queen, she's great, she's great, she's great, she's not great, oh, mate, she will be our downfall. And if people don't wake up very, very quickly, we're all going to be in a lot of trouble. And that is the be-all and end-all, mate. That is the bottom line. But as it stands at the moment, people are waking up, but they're not waking up quick enough, and things are moving very fast now, very fast. You know, we've got all this, the new bedroom tax coming in, so anybody who's living in out of work, who has two bedrooms and they're only a couple, they're not being, their benefits are being cut, which benefits are a minimum anyway, although there's a propaganda mission going on in the mainstream media at the moment to sort of vilify them, make out that they're having it off at everybody's expense, which is totally, totally bollocks, total bollocks. But they're cutting their money. I believe that if you're unemployed, you have to go for something like five jobs a week. Well, just last week, Ian Duncan Smith, our health secretary, was interviewed on radio, and he came unstuck because there was like eight people wanted a coffee shop, and 1,700 people applied for it for minimum wage. Incidentally, they've just increased the minimum wage by 12 pence an hour, gives you £4.80 extra a week to slog your bollocks out. And the Queen was advertising for a gardener, funny enough, working out all hours, had to have a diploma in gardening or whatever, and she was paying something like 10 pence above the minimum wage. Whoever got that job would have still needed benefits, or would have been still entitled to benefits to top up the wage, and that's the richest woman in the world, paying peanuts for a head gardener. Which is just a total piss take, mate. A total piss. She knows that whoever took that job would be dependent on a top-up benefit. That is the money she was paying. How can you justify that? How can she be gracious or noble or when she can't even pay her staff a living wage, And I say benefits are being cut at the rate of knots. And once the poor, we do have children starving in this country, make no mistake about that either. People are committing suicide. Just a couple of days ago, a fellow who'd had a stroke, partially paralysed, he was taken off the incapacity benefit, deemed fit for work, shot himself because his benefits were stopped, because they have the power now. And it's also been proved that the staff at the job centres are paid to sanction people. So you have ordinary staff deciding who eats for the week and who doesn't eat for the week, which is absolutely disgraceful, And this benefits at an appointment.
The reason why, Chris, that I've decided to never, ever apply for any kind of government benefit ever again. Well, one of the reasons anyway.
I don't know how your benefits sort of go, I say, but we've got absolutely stupid newspaper reports about people buying, like, Versace clothes, designer gear, and sending their children to private school. And, there's three or four of them stories on my site, which I've absolutely taken apart, and they're so easy to take apart, Vinny. It's you don't even have to work at it. Anyone with who can add two and two. Can sort of like, the figures don't work, but people believe it, and you've got this almost replaced racism over here. Anyone who's not working is a scrounging, no good, want something for nothing, having it off drug addicts, which just isn't true.
What I love is when, I'm a professional protester and radio broadcaster and derive my income out of doing this, right? And then when I do protests outside, megaphoning on the side of the street or whatever, you have people who drive past, and this is their political engagement for the year. Get a job!
Exactly. And you can get a job. Well, people would work if you know, 8 people, 1,700 applicants for minimum wage as a waitress in a coffee shop. That's the kind of job market at the moment. And even when you got a job, and they're saying that people on unemployment benefit are better off not working. Well, supposedly now we've had the benefits change, so no one can be better off on welfare than they are working. Yet when the minimum wage was introduced and everything, and free childcare and blah 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 blah, no one was going to be worse off by working, which it was just bollocks, as has been proved. But why would anybody go to work and slog their bollocks out 40 hours a week in all weathers, you know, when they can get the same money? Well, that's another thing. In our job centres now, advertising young people 40 hours a week, stacking shelves, whatnot. No money. No wages. You just keep your benefits. So what's the point of the minimum wage? Now, if a firm can take on someone to stack their shelves for them, then they can afford to pay them a wage if the job's there. But it's the same. I mean, community service. When someone commits an offence, goes to court, they get community service. They have to work for nothing. They still get their benefits, obviously, and they work for nothing. So what you've basically got is you've got now people being punished for being unemployed, although there are no jobs.
Now, see, I think that volunteer work is highly valued in the community, you know, man in a soup kitchen or helping to, I don't know, helping the local council workers do the gardens or something like that. Or planting
that's
some...
what our criminals do, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we're talking about big corporations, Vinny. There's been a couple pulled out, but it's these big corporations are queuing up to take these people who work for nothing for 6 months, and it's supposedly voluntarily on a volunteer basis. But that's not true.
Let me stop you there. It's a volunteer basis, or we cut your benefit off.
Exactly. That is exactly it. Now, we had Ian Duncan Smith, Ian Dighead Smith, on the radio the other day saying, people are saying how much they value this chance for this job work. Yet, it's just been to court. It's been to court for breaching people. So if they value this work experience, why is it going to court? Why are people up in arms? And I say, we've got a ludicrous situation where people are in social housing. Margaret Thatcher sold all the council houses off back in the 80s. A lot of people got rich out of them. And now there's no housing in the country, you know? So all these people who've sort of been in their homes, their housing association homes as they are now, for the past 30 years or whatever, and their children have left home now, they're finding themselves forced to move out, yet there is no available housing, you know, one-bedroom housing to move into. So what do they do? So their benefits get cut.
Yeah, I guess they'll have to join the Occupy movement and live in a tent. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with Chris Spivey, chrisspivey.co.uk. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're jamming a big monkey wrench into the pedophile network of the United Kingdom with my very special guest, Chris Spivey. Maybe jamming a big monkey wrench into the pedophile network is actually a bit of a nasty image for this late at night for you, Chris. Sorry about that.
That's all right, Vinnie. Can I just get back to this benefits thing, because it is important. I say we've got a situation where you've got children going hungry, job centre staff deciding who eats and who doesn't eat for the week. You have disabled people committing suicide. And this isn't an isolated case, this fellow who shot himself, blew his brains out all over the front lawn. Far from an isolated case. And on top of that, there's no jobs, eight vacancies, 1,700 applicants, minimum wage. Yet we're paying £60,000 a week to subsidise the House of Lords canteen. You know, we're paying we can't afford to be ourselves, yet we're paying £60,000 week in, week out to pay for it. And they're all paedophiles. They're all paedophiles, mate. I can connect sleeves to every single one of the 760 lords and the 650 MPs in Parliament. Some sort of sleaze, either be it fiddling their expenses. Yeah, people are losing their homes, and we're paying their mortgages on their second house. You know, the poorest people in society, they don't pay their TV licence. They're up in court. Yeah, we're paying for the MPs' TV licences. What other job could you get where someone paid for your second home? And let, you know, and paid for your TV license, paid for your expenses. We had our Chancellor, George Osborne, bought a standard class rail ticket, sat in first class, got caught, big thing in the papers over here, got caught, refused to budge. Well, why didn't he just buy a first class ticket? Because they're not allowed to. They're not allowed to. But he thought he had the right to travel first class on a standard fare ticket. Do you know, they just don't live in the real world, mate. They don't. Yeah, this is a man who, I mean, 2005 it was exposed for taking cocaine with a prostitute. It came out all okay with him, but and because of a man called Andy Coulson, who went on to work for the Prime Minister, who George Osborne apparently recommended him. Now, this Andy Coulson's up in court for the phone hacking scandal that's happened over here, where we're hacking into everybody's phones with Rebecca Brooks. So, and it was also coming to paper that Cameron and Rebecca Brooks was sending each other lovey-dovey text messages, you know, and the furtive look and whatnot. You know. And it's just 100% said, but they don't realise, or people don't realise, should I say, what these people are doing to them. You know, so far the middle classes have been relatively untouched. It's all the poorer people who are a lot more aware of what is going on around them. But there's this fear, and this is what I tell people in my blogs all the time, Vinny. You know, what are you scared of? What are you scared of? You know, what is going to happen? Oh, you know, I've seen so many times this fellow's going to meet an accident. This well, I'm still here. I'm still here, mate. And I've named people. I named Rolf Harris 5 months ago. And I've repeatedly named. You look on my website there. There's five or six articles on him. The Montford galleries who he's working for, they're absolutely shitting themselves that this was going to come out. But, and it has come out yesterday. It came out in the mainstream media. But I was contacted by one of their artists the official line that because he is their biggest asset and they're fine about going under. I don't know how they're going to get on now he's been named. But people are just so, so scared. There's this climate of fear. And I'm going, what are they going to do what are they going to do to you? We're not living. We're existing over here. And it's getting worse and worse. And people can't see it. And the clap. You know, we just had Cyprus where they've taken the people. That's going to happen over here. You know, people don't keep your money in the bank, people, because they're going to
take New Zealand government. The New Zealand government is saying, hey, what they did in Cyprus is a great idea. Let's start trying to hit. You know, they already announced it like on the same day, pretty much.
It's robbery. It's just out and out robbery, Vinny.
And here's the point. You know, people are like worried, oh, what if they put me in jail or something like that?
Exactly.
Right, what if they execute you later on because you didn't do anything?
Exactly. And this is what, and it is this sort of the Nazi, the Third Reich mentality, you know, say nothing, keep in the shadows, go along with what everybody thinks, and that is going to be our downfall, mate. It is going to be our downfall, because if people do not start waking up very quickly, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. Already, I say that there's children starving in this country. There's the secret courts. They're stealing children. And just today, yesterday, the NSPCC, who I was talking about, who employed the MK terrorist, the mass murderer, as a grief counsellor, who is incidentally still a councillor today and was still registered with the General Social Care Council, because they have to re-register. All social workers have to re-register every 2 years. Yeah, he's still being employed, even though he originally fraudulently registered with the managers of the NSPCC helping him to register, do you know? And I say, but they've been in the paper again today, saying that half a million kids are being abused in their homes. Well, they get money from the Green government to investigate these cases. So if they know there's 500,000 children being abused in their homes, why aren't they investigating it, Anthony? Why are they just saying, like, you know, oh, it's not good, but we need more powers. We need... What they're saying by need more powers is what they mean is that they want to be able to take children away from the pet before they're even in the world. I've had friends had to flee to Ireland, who have never been convicted of an offence, never even been to court. Didn't go to court, get found not guilty, never even taken to court, had their children taken off, had to flee to Ireland. And we're sort of 5 years later, they flew to Ireland on the advice of an MP over here who supposedly campaigns, but I don't listen to it because they've all bent. The whole 650, mate, they might call themselves campaigning MPs, but all they've got is their own welfare at heart. Anyway, but under his advice, they flew to Southern Ireland. And they still had the child taken off of them, even though they have never been convicted of any offence. There's no evidence to say that their children were abused. And still 5 years later, the case is still ongoing, Vinny. You know? How can that be right? And they say it's for the good of the child. How can that be? The child now, you know, lives with foster parents, visits the parents every week. That's got to screw the child up, mate. So how can I say they're doing it for the welfare of the child? 5 years later, they're bent over backwards to do all the assessments and everything. And it's not the Irish social services who are being awkward. It is the pressure they're getting from the British social services. And the British social services, they are corrupt as they come, mate, and they are stealing children. And anybody who thinks, well, there's no smoke without fire, I can tell you that there's a lot of smoke and there's a lot of fire, and they are being taken illegally, and they are being taken, and they are being abused in care.
Now, I had heard that in the UK about 100,000 children per year go missing or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, you know where they go, Vinny, don't you? You know where they don't go missing. They don't go. They're abused by the elites. They're digging up bodies on the Queen's estate, and if you dig up a body, if someone dug up a body in my back garden, they come knocking at my door. They can dig them up on the Sandringham estate and totally ignore the Queen and the Duck. Well, no one under we're a sovereign country. No one is supposedly above the law, and like I say, why haven't the police investigating Savile? Why haven't they been knocking on the palace door? Because all the evidence points to them being involved in paedophilia. And I say there's no other reason. I say, go back to Derek Lord, the lobbyist, who's now fled to South Africa because of my expose of him, who was originally named in Scallywag magazine. He was invited to Cameron's wedding. Okay, and on my website again, there's exactly the wording of the invitation, and it's Derek Lord saying how thrilled he was. He'd been a long-time friend of Samantha Cameron's. Samantha Cameron isn't what she seems. She was good friends with the rapper Tricky from Massive Attack, drug dealer. Very good friends with him, but she makes out she's all these mumbly types, but that's a load of old bollocks. But no one will take the bull by the horns, if you like, and because they're all in it together, mate. They are all in it together, you know. And you think, well, why was Savile so in with the royal family? Well, because, do you know Jimmy Savile? You must know Jimmy Savile.
I heard of him. Wasn't he in the news recently?
Mate, this is where all this paedophilia stuff has come from. Now, David Icke named Jimmy Savile as a paedophile. I believe he was the first. I may be mistaken. I believe he was the first, but he named Savile as a paedophile and a necrophiliac back in the 90s when he named Ted Heath, the former Prime Minister, who I said was blackmailed into taking the country into the EU. Or the common market, as it was then. And no one said. He also named George Bush Sr. as a serial paedophile, child abuser and whatnot.
Apparently, old Daddy Bush likes to shoot up heroin while he's doing stuff to the kids.
Who? Daddy Bush.
Daddy Bush, you know, H.W. Bush.
Yeah, I know H.W. Bush. I mean, there's stories of Bush Jr., George W. I don't know what the W stands for.
It stands for Walker.
Oh, it's Walker, is it? Yeah. I weren't sure. Someone told me it was Wanker, but I don't know. But him and Blair, apparently.
You'd be forgiven for that mistake, but go on.
I think it's more accurate than Walker anyway, mate. I mean, that man stood on top of the ruins of 9/11, stood on top and said, you're either with us or against us, on top of the ruin of the people that they had killed there without...
We kill and enslave our own people. You're either with us or against us.
Exactly. Hey, let us not. Was it that Obama said? Who's gay, by the way? there's a whole thing on my website about that. But was it? Let us not tolerate conspiracy theorists. Well, there's the old saying. You know, the conspiracy theories are actually the conspiracy facts, you know, and it is the government. I mean, the whole 9/11 thing, it was a pantomime, fairy tale, you know, planes flying into steel column towers and the heat of the jet fuel that burns 1,000 degrees below what's needed melted the steel. And brought them down. Never mind all the asbestos in there that they were going to be condemned because they didn't meet the safety regulations anyway.
Fireproof asbestos, mind you.
Hey?
Fireproof asbestos, mind you.
Yeah, exactly. Which didn't meet the regulations, so and it wasn't cost effective to replace.
A friend of mine, her sister has a big contracting company here, and she told her that she went to New York to do a bid on the World Trade Center for asbestos removal. And the reason why they were doing asbestos removal, or at least trying to pitch for the contract, is because the owners of the World Trade Center wanted to do controlled demolition for it, but the EPA said it would be illegal because all the dust from the... asbestos would have had major health effects on everybody in New York City.
That was condemned for me. The buildings was good because the new regulations that came in didn't the asbestos levels were too high. They didn't meet the safety standards. So I say that they had the choice. And Larry Silverstein knew this when he bought the towers. Larry Silverstein sort of went from a relatively rich man to a multi-billionaire just on the strength of the Twin Towers, you know? He bought them knowing
thank
that they was condemned.
Thank God for that double terrorism insurance, eh?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it just? Thank God for them 19 who didn't die in that inferno that melted the steel that bore down the towers in their own footprint, mate, at full speed.
They must have been eating really, really spicy Arabian meals before getting on the plane, just so that the content of their stomachs, while engulfed in flame, would set all the
exactly, and then mobile phones, the conversations on the mobile phones, you know, let's roll and whatnot. I'm surprised John Wayne wasn't on that plane, to be honest with you, mate. We had a program over here, 9/11 road trip, where they was dropping eggs onto the floor to demonstrate, you know, demonstrate how the plane sort of hit this Pennsylvanian field, and there's no wreckage. Well, apparently it tunneled itself 40 foot into the ground, you know, and you just think, do what? You know,
it's just retarded. We'll be right back after the break with Chris Spivey, chrisspivey.co.uk. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's my final segment here with the surprisingly wonderful Chris Spivey, who has a lot of very interesting commentary on the nasty, evil pedophile ring that is running the UK and pretty much the whole world. Like, I've looked into a number of activists' claims over here in New Zealand about the pedophile rings operating within child, youth and family services. You know, our equivalent of the CPS in the States is the same thing. This pedophile network is global, and there is a shockingly large amount of money involved here, like huge, unbelievable. They have massive, massive reasons, billions of reasons, I'd probably say, to keep all this hush-hush entirely. Because if anything really rises to prominence that, gives the dumbed down general public an inkling that there really is something massive going on here, whew, imagine the possible potential consequences.
The thing is, Vinny, I got sent a story last year, actually, from a fellow who's from New Zealand, and he fled to England from New Zealand. What it was, his 14-year-old daughter was being abused by these two St. John's ambulance men. I don't know if you're familiar with this story or not. It did make all the papers over in your part of the world. Rather than prosecute these two St. John's ambulance, who was joined by a third, although only the two abused this 14-year-old girl, they had the family was hounded out of Australia, you know, and they're living in England now. And I say I run the story on in my article about paedophile politicians, and these two St. John's ambulance men, they're receiving the Queen's Award, our Queen, you know, by the Governor General of the New Zealand. And I don't know whether they actually got the award in there. As far as I know, they did, but it was a big hoo-ha. But say your social services, instead of prosecuting these two St. John's ambulance, they said this 14-year-old girl has to be allowed to explore her sexuality. 14, having a threesome with two St. John's ambulance men, you know? And in fact, you'd be surprised how much your part of the world gets mentioned over here. Wasn't Madeleine McCann supposedly spotted in New Zealand the other week?
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Madeleine McCann is?
No.
Madeleine McCann was a little girl who from a British family. Prince Charles is involved in that as well, believe it or not. And they went on holiday to Portugal. And they left Madeleine and her little sister in their chalet while they joined their friends for dinner on this complex. Supposedly someone broke into the chalet there, and she hasn't been seen since, although sniffer dogs sniffed out that there'd been a body in the boot of their car and whatnot. But Prince Charles is involved in that as well, and high, powerful spokesman, and the Freemasons, and Leicestershire police force. Every single police force in the country is corrupt. South Yorkshire police, we talked about 7-7 earlier, Vinny. A fellow who was intelligence for South Yorkshire police told them that, told the bigwigs at South Yorkshire police that it was an inside job. and he cost him his job, you know. You got the North Yorkshire and West Yorkshire police covering up for this Jimmy Savile, friend to royalty. The police investigation into Savile is called Operation Yew Tree. Okay, and it's a clear whitewash, I say, if all the articles there on my site, go on, yeah.
What I find funny is the policeman saying that 7/7 was an inside job, and as a result of saying something's an inside job, then he's out of the job.
This wasn't an ordinary police. This was their intelligence officer. He said, I've read his report, Favreau's name is, and he says when he was compiling this report, he didn't know whether he should go with it or not, because he said all the evidence pointed to the British government and security services of carrying out this job. And he said, my conscience wouldn't let me not. So he submitted the report knowing that he was going to get him fired. But I say, this isn't like your beat officer. All our beat officers, all they do is drink and drive and whatnot, and mug people and whatnot. In fact, under Operation Orr, the investigation, police investigation into internet paedophiles, you'd be surprised. The top three professions are judges, teachers, and policemen who were picked up. And then you're obviously the politicians, but we've only got 650 of them nonsense.
Well, that seems like a position of power abuse, essentially.
Can
use his power, police can use their power, teachers can use their power, loud them over the kids, you know, that kind of thing.
The thing is, Vinny, 30 years ago in this country, if you saw a policeman on the beat, he'd be on his own, he'd stop. Not me, but 30 years ago, I was only a little lad. But, a woman said, have you got the time? How do you get to such and such? And you know, and he was a reassuring presence on the streets. You know, so it's 30 or 40 years ago. Now, you never see a policeman on their own. They're all done up there in their combat gear, like, you know, their battle fatigues, utility boots that Batman would be jealous of. And they're sinister. And even when you've done nothing wrong, your first reaction to seeing these is get out, move, even though you've done nothing wrong. Because and people constantly used to be the police cars were white, and now we've got black, sinister like Batmobiles over it, you know, and everything about them they can't arrest anybody. When I was tattooing in a shop in a place called Shoeburyness, a seaside town in Essex, across the road from that, there was one of these special unit schools for children up to 12 years of age. You know, problem children. Now, to me, I don't know how you can have a problem child at 12 o'clock, at 12 years old, but you do. But the police were there all the time, and they come out, and there'd be two of these policemen done up in their battle gear, you know, and wrestling this little kid who you think, well, what could he do? You know, to the floor and pinning him down, and I'm like, a lot of times, I mean, they go and say, "Whoa, calm it down, right? Calm it down." The kid was a midget, you know, and I say, "Yeah, no doubt they are little bastards because you can't get away with anything in schools now. The kids know they're right, so you know they know that the teachers can't touch them and." It has taken the respect away. I mean, I brought up my daughter since she was 6 months old on my own, and so I used to go to all the teach of the open days and whatnot, and you'd have the headmaster serving the kids drinks. I thought, blimey, that's changed since I was at school. It used to be like the kids serving the headmaster, and I'm not saying the discipline. It's just that the kids know what they can get away with. But I do not personally see how you cannot control a 12-year-old child, or 11, 12-year-old child, without having resort to policemen bringing him out with his arms shoved up his back. and kneel him on black when, in the back when he's on the floor, you know, and they are just bully boys. I say they can't arrest anybody on their own. They can't. But they don't. I mean, there's a couple of videos on YouTube. One in particular by a fellow called Darren Pollard, who's an independent filmmaker over here, and it went viral. I don't know if you've seen the video, but it was a male and a female copper walking along the road, and Darren Pollard was filming them. You know, so they've just walked onto his land and said, "Oh, stop filming. What's your name?" And he said, "I'm not telling you a lie. You know, I'm quite in time. I'm a filmmaker. I know the law." And they go, "No, it's against the law." So the male coppers turn around, giving it all out over his radio, find out what we can do. And the female officer is antagonizing the fella, trying to wind him up. And he said, I'm not going to bite. You know, I'm not going to give you an excuse. But she was trying to wind him up. And for a police officer to quote a law that isn't a law is illegal. Yeah, they do. They do. Then when it finally comes that Darren Pollard was right, he quite entitled to film whoever he wants on his own property. They walked. No, sorry, sir. Sorry, do we have, you know, just walked off. Never said goodbye. Nothing. And that is the whole attitude of the police these days. They are a law. They're just bully boys, mate. They're bully boys.
Yeah. They're basically like, hey, we're gods. In New Zealand, we just passed a law. What's her name? Justice Sinister Judith Collins here passed a law that said that if you assault a police officer, even if they're off duty, even if they started the fight, it counts as assaulting an officer.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and they believe they're unpressed, mate. In theory, a policeman is there to protect and serve, but they're not. They just when they qualify as policemen from the police cadet training school, they have to swear an oath to uphold the common law. They don't even know the difference between common law and statute law, anyway, mate. You know, which is obvious.
Well, unfortunately, Chris, we've run out of time here, mate, unfortunately. Well, if you want to go check out his articles and his very well-put-together website, if I may say so, chrisspivey.co.uk is the website. And ladies and gentlemen, if you could please donate or subscribe to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, we're in a bit of financial trouble at the moment. Really appreciate your support. See you again.